Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday. It's February 13th. 15 degrees here in Old Town Park City and mostly cloudy skies. We've got 16 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Hayes. And we are waiting.
Hey there, Leslie. Yeah, well, don't worry. The wait will not be too long out there as we go throughout today because that snow is knocking on the door right now. It's moving through for areas just to our west from Elko back to the west, and that atmospheric river will be moving in. So let me get you caught up on the latest here. Of course, we've got those winter weather alerts that have been issued. Winter storm warning now. Yesterday when I was talking with you guys, it was a winter weather or winter storm watch. It is now winter storm warning for Heber City and Park City. We're looking at a potential snow accumulations between 8 to 14 inches, but folks around the Park City area will likely see amounts a little higher than that. And this kicks off around 11 a.m., so expect this snow to start moving in sometime around 11 to noon time, and then it will be with us for the afternoon and evening. So expect winter driving conditions out there. That means hazardous conditions will likely impact your Thursday evening and Friday morning commutes as we are expecting those significant accumulations. Now, as we go throughout the day in the Heber Valley, we may bump above freezing into the low to mid 30s out there, but in Park City, we will likely stay below freezing. And as we go throughout tonight, temperatures will drop back into the 20s, so expect that snow to continue. It could mix with a little bit of rain late tonight, or I should say really more early this evening in the Heber Valley, but it'll quickly go back over to snow later on tonight. In Park City, it's obviously going to stay all snow, and some of that snow will be heavy at times, along with some gusty south winds. So that's going to mean blowing snow, possibly blowing and drifting of the snow, along with very low visibilities as we go throughout this afternoon and again for your Friday. High temperatures on your Friday will climb a little warmer, so we'll maybe get above freezing in Park City and highs around 40 degrees in the Heber Valley. But don't let that fool you because another surge of cold air arrives Friday night into Saturday. And along with that, we've got another round of snow heading our way. So we'll have more snow showers going on Friday night into Saturday, both in Park City and in the Heber Valley. And if that wasn't enough, we'll likely have a few snow showers still continuing, especially around Park City, even into Sunday. And we'll see those temperatures dropping back into the teens by early Sunday morning with highs in the mid-30s to around 40 degrees across most of the Wasatch Back. And after that, the active weather pattern stays active. So if you didn't get enough winter weather, looks like we've got at least another one or two more storms heading our way for next week. The first one arrives sometime Sunday into Monday. So right around President's Day, we're looking at another storm that will bring more snow to most of the Wasatch Back, including the Heber Valley and Park City. And then after we get towards that system, probably another system Tuesday night into Wednesday that will bring yet another round of snow. And again, all of these systems could have accumulating snow. Temperatures are not going to be brutally cold after that, as we'll likely see highs in the 30s or to around 40 degrees for most of next week. But we're going to have plenty of precipitation. So, Leslie, with the snow just hours away, I know you're excited. And don't worry, I hope you got the shovels or maybe the snow blowers out, because you will definitely need them come later tonight and especially tomorrow.
We're counting on it, Cedric. Thank you.
Yes.
And with a look in the backcountry, on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Drew. Good morning, Drew. Are you?
Morning, Leslie. Yeah, we start out moderate this morning for new and old drifts of hard slabs and soft slabs in standard lee terrain. There's just been sort of fairly relentless winds that are keeping the drifts sensitive again in the mid and upper elevations. We started at moderate this morning, but Cedric outlined the big picture here as we head into this afternoon through the early part of the weekend. I've issued an avalanche watch. I suspect the danger may reach considerable in the upper elevations by late afternoon. I think we'll easily hit high danger overnight into tomorrow. I suspect Greg, who's forecasting tomorrow, will have an avalanche warning in place for Friday and probably Saturday. So it's going to be very dangerous, very active holiday weekend for us. And just stay tuned. It should be a blockbuster for us, and certainly the avalanche danger will rise in lockstep with the storm.
Okay, you're thinking the same for the Wasatch Back, because we know that the Wasatch Front, you know, resorts tend to get the good snow.
I do think so. I think that it's going to be fairly evenly blanketed across most of the state. In fact, I think from Logan to Ogden to Provo, which has sort of gotten shortchanged for much of the year. And I also think the Wasatch Back Park City should do well. Heber, Snake Creek, all the way down to Provo. And I mean, the avalanche warning will probably go through again for most of the state. And even they have winter storm warnings lined up for even the Moab area mountains and down in the mountains in southwest Utah as well. So it should be a pretty darn good producer for most of the state.
Okay, and so well needed. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Council Member Tanya Hansen here in just another minute. The Executive Director and President of Historic Park City Lions, Ginger Wicks and Monty Cote, take a look back at Sundance 2025 and the results of the survey they did, as well as the future of January 2027. Park City School District Superintendent Lindsay Huntsman will be joined by School Board Member Nick Hill, and finally, Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang with a preview of some of their upcoming seasons, as well as a look at how Sundance went for them. The Summit County Council met yesterday, and on the phone with a recap, County Council Chair Tanya Hansen. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, first, just wanted to check in with you. You live, of course, in North Summit County. Any idea how the Dakota Pacific referendum signature gathering effort is going on there on the east side?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I've seen that they're meant to be at the county library, but I haven't seen anyone. I don't know. I haven't seen it on social media. I have no idea what's going on.
What are you hearing from your neighbors? I mean, what do they think about the Kimball Junction development?
Most people in the North Summit area don't know. They'll ask me, what's going on with the county? And I'll say, oh, Dakota Pacific. And they go, what's that? People have no idea what's going on. And I think most of the people in this area are very indifferent.
So they don't, a lot of them shop here in the Kimball Junction area and work, no?
That is true. I mean, we do have one grocery store in town, the Summit Merc, where you can buy anything from a Carhartt coat to horseshoes to bacon and eggs, but you can't buy fish. So, you know, if you want to expand your dinner, you need to go to Kimball Junction. And that's where most people do their shopping, their dining. You know, we're part of the problem of the traffic in Kimball's Junction. There's no doubt about it.
All right, let's move on to the Housing Authority. A couple of council members missing yesterday. And when it came to adopt the bylaws for the Housing Authority, Council Member Roger Armstrong asked to have a wider discussion in March. So what's scheduled to be discussed then, whether or not you do this?
No, we're going to move forward with the Housing Authority, there's no doubt. But, you know, there's a lot of discussion of how we should be moving forward strategically. And do we wait for Mr. Jones to hire the person who will be, you know, overseeing the Housing Authority so they're involved in these conversations? I think that would be the way to go. We are scheduled for this offsite on March 13th to discuss further the strategies around a housing authority and if we're missing anything and how to move it forward. So I think, you know, I was a little apprehensive because it feels like we're dragging this out, but we want to make sure we get it right. So I think March 13th will be a really great conversation and help us move things forward.
All right. Well, I was going to say, are you wasting valuable time? Because we have certainly heard how difficult it is becoming to receive these federal low-income tax credits, which the Housing Authority would certainly want to make use of.
Yeah, you know, but perhaps we're wasting valuable time, but I really think, you know, this is a huge step forward for the county, and we need to make sure we get it right, and we need to make sure all of the county councilors are comfortable with how we move forward.
All right, moving on to the road vacation, almost 2 hours of the meeting, half of it was about vacating county Class D roads on Lewis Peak. Much of it is gated, so there's not a ton of public access. A livestock owner and a property owner asking to make the roads private. Council did not vote on this, instead bringing it back for another public hearing. So why are you waiting on this?
Well, vacating roads for the county is a very, very big deal. And I have a lot of personal experience on this with my family in a road vacation, and I won't get into that. But anyway, there's a lot of property owners in this area. And if people aren't familiar with this area, it's the North Summit side of Lewis's Peak. And it goes up kind of behind the Wahali development and there's just a lot of property owners. And for us to vacate a road, every property owner needs to be on board. And that was not the case last night. You know, my concern is the future. If someone wants to put a development in the future, and this road is vacated by the county and it's dictated by a few property owners, you know, that could cause problems in the future if someone wants to do something different with their property. So we told the folks who brought the application forward, every property owner needs to be on board before we can move this forward.
So if, in fact, they did take over the maintenance and the plowing and all of that, would that agreement mean that residents would also need to maintain Wahali Resort roads?
No, Wahali is at the bottom. They would need to be involved in a partnership. And the road kind of splits off if you go up there. You go through the Wahali gate, and if you continue straight, you get into that development. If you kind of turn to the left, you go up and around that development, which is the road that they're talking about. Yeah. So Wahali would be involved for sure. But, you know, that's not public to begin with. Wahali, that's a gated community. So, but I do think they need to weigh in, and they were not there last night.
Okay. You did hear from somebody mention one of the wildfires last year that there were some fireworks set off near the road. North Summit was able to extinguish it. So is that part of what is motivating this road vacation, just to keep people off of it?
Yeah, you know, it's all private property up there. And so the only reason someone should really be on that road is to access their private property. But if it's a county road, you know, anybody can go up there. But, you know, I have that concern everywhere, not just in an area like this. We have the same concern, you know, going up Mirror Lake Highway, people setting off fireworks. It can happen anywhere. So to me, that's not the huge justification of vacating it or not.
Let's get into the state legislative session. A major transit room tax bill, HB 456, was released. Deputy County Manager Jana Young says it's going to be changed very soon, but the new language isn't public yet. So under the substitute, Summit County seems to get more flexibility in how it uses the transit room taxes. What does staff say that means for the budget?
Well, we didn't talk about it specifically to the budget. However, it does give us a lot more flexibility, you know, what they're talking about doing. And we're in favor of this, by the way. House Bill 456 is going to increase the transient room tax statewide by 1%. 50% of those revenues going to the state for tourism mitigation impacts, 25% to a grant program, which has been changed for third to sixth class counties instead of fourth class counties is what it originally was. And 25% stays with the county, where there's flexibility that we can use it for EMS, law enforcement, roads, maintenance, facilities, and trails. So that gives us, you know, a lot of flexibility. And the great thing with them adding trails in there is, one example I like to use is the rail to trail. Right. So now we have money that can help us maintain that trail into the future. So it gives us a lot more flexibility and opportunity to stretch our dollars.
So if the state passes a bill letting you use short-term rental listings to find unlicensed short-term rentals and get them to pay that transient room tax, are we headed for a financial windfall here?
We can only hope. I don't know where that short-term rental bill is headed. But that would be really great. I don't know about a windfall, but it would help, definitely.
Okay. And finally wanted to check in on House Bill 309. This is the bill that would ban hunting, affecting the no hunting requirement for the 910 Ranch. Has that gone away, as County Manager Shane Scott said he was being reassured that it would by the sponsor?
It has not yet, but I do believe it will be going away, at least at the very least, that language out of that bill should be going away. There's a lot in that bill. It's not just about hunting on a conservation easement. It is, you know, can landowners feed wildlife on their property at any time, not just in hard winters. So there's a lot in that bill, and we are very confident the language around the conservation easement property will go away.
All right, and then several bills threaten to overload the county clerk's office workload. Any others that you're concerned about?
Well, there's a lot we're keeping our eye on. Actually, I'm heading to the Capitol this morning to sit in on the UAC legislative session and see where we're at. We're looking at energy bills. We're looking at the voters' bills. We're looking at a lot of different bills, too many to really dig into at this point. I would ask people, if they're really interested, to go online and research these bills and reach out to us, because we are at the Capitol all the time, and we have lobbyists down there that can help us with these bills. So, you know, get engaged, reach out to your representatives, and let's, you know, try to do things that are right for us and our constituents.
Okay. UAC, of course, is the Utah Association of Counties. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, that's it.
All right, Tanya, thanks.
Have a great day. Bye.
Tanya Hansen, again, the chair of the Summit County Council. The Historic Park City Alliance has wrapped up its membership survey of Sundance 2025. In the studio with details, I have the executive director of HPCA, Ginger Wicks, along with president of the board, Monty Coates. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So, Ginger, what did you want to find out? What did you ask members?
Well, we wanted to just take a pulse to see how pedestrianizing the street affected businesses. Keeping in mind, however, that the whole reason the street was closed was for public safety, we still wanted to take a pulse on how that possibly affected businesses. And we didn't get a great response, unfortunately, to the survey. We only had 49 businesses participate, so not really enough to get some great data points, unfortunately. But what we did learn from those that participated, it was pretty much split down the middle. Half of them said it did affect their business negatively, and the other half said it had no effect on their business.
So the location, though, I mean, was that split then, north-south of the street?
Yeah, the majority of the businesses that participated were above Heber Avenue, of course, because that's where this closure took place. And then again, we asked, you know, regardless, how were your business levels during Sundance? And again, it was split. 21% said they were lower than usual, and 19% said they were the same. So it's really split down the middle. Same old in terms of Upper Main Street. We did get a lot of feedback from the businesses on Upper Main that whenever the street is closed, attention needs to be paid to Upper Main Street. Those businesses always are negatively affected when we close the street. So we did hear that loud and clear from those businesses up there.
So any talk about maybe where the street gets closed? I mean, would it make more sense to try and leave Upper Main open, or does that just invite traffic and on Hillside and traffic where we don't want it?
Yeah, you know, again, the reason the street was closed was for public safety. And so it's really hard to probably create a scenario that serves public safety but also allows traffic flow in the areas that we need it. I'm sure that if the city is going to consider closing the street for public safety, again, for other events, I'm sure they're going to look at the feedback that we got and try to make adjustments where they can. But again, it was for public safety, so it's challenging.
All right. So you mentioned 49 replied out of how many possible?
Oh, gosh, 200 plus. Yeah, so not a great response, unfortunately.
All right. Monty, your business located there, the Elks Building, right?
No, we're Upper Main Street.
Upper Main. Okay, yeah, well, let's hear from you.
323 and 312 Main Street.
Okay.
Yeah. So we actually saw, for the whole festival, we were down 20%. But for the first weekend, we actually saw just a small increase in traffic, which I was greatly surprised about. But for the whole festival, we were down considerably.
So, yeah. Are you measuring traffic by people who walk through the door?
No,
or by
I'm dollars?
Dollars.
I'm dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't count by dollars. Yeah.
All right. Well, so that's good news. But we also saw pretty much Deadsville as of Tuesday.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. And you know, and maybe some of that might have been decreased skier traffic that week as well. I don't know what the numbers are, but we definitely saw after Tuesday, it was a ghost town, and it was slow. And so we saw decreased business for the rest of the week, which normally that second weekend, it did pick up for us, which is normally our bright spot for the festival, but it didn't pick up enough to bring us back up above previous year's numbers. So,
yeah. What season overall, including Sundance, I mean, what are you looking at?
For us, January was a little slow. I think maybe we saw effects of snow and maybe the strike. It changed some booking numbers. I don't know. But January was definitely slower for us overall. I was thinking of just the Sundance weekend. I was thinking about whether that was a success or not. And I was thinking, it depends on what yardstick you use. If you're looking at the businesses with dollars, then that yardstick, it was like Ginger said, it was very split. Some businesses said it didn't affect them. Some people said it affected them. But I think maybe for the Sundance visitor, if you look at that yardstick, I think they liked it. I thought they seemed to be enjoying the closed street and congregating together. But it didn't translate into positive business activity.
Mm. So, do you want to add?
Well, I was just going to say, some of the feedback that we have received is that while it was lovely to have the street open and that was great, well, that's where everybody was in the street. Whereas in previous years, walking the sidewalks, they were maybe doing more window shopping and coming into the stores, but having them in the street discouraged them from doing that.
Anytime we change the dynamic of how people access the street or where cars are or people are, I think it always creates winners and losers. And no matter whether you close a portion of the street or you change the traffic or you change the parking for the weekend or something, anytime you artificially alter things, it changes the dynamic and creates winners and losers. Some people are going to do a little better, but other people will lose. So it's always tough to make changes.
Yeah, and especially it just seems so last minute. Did that not help?
For sure. That didn't help. And being able to inform the street would have been great.
Yeah, but again, it was for public safety reasons. And like Ginger said, as I was talking about my yardstick, if you look at that, it was a success in that we didn't have any major incidents, things like that. And so I'm sure from the police standpoint, that was a success. So yeah.
Yeah. So what are you guys hearing about the future of Sundance? I mean, how do you feel about it? I mean, do we even need it anymore?
I think overall it's still a benefit to our community. It's just it's a great event that drives traffic to the community and drives lodging. And I think we've lost a lot of those great events throughout our the last few years, the kind of things that are traffic drivers and tourism drivers. And I think losing Sundance would be bad overall. And so I'm supportive of it for the community's sake. From the 30,000 foot level, I think it's better for the community. And so I support it. I support it coming back, and I hope it comes back. If we can maybe share it with Salt Lake, maybe we can still get some of those great benefits without some of the congestion. I don't know. I don't know how it will work out, but we're all interested to see how it actually works out at the end of the day.
Yeah, and we certainly have heard over the last several months, it's like kind of we did this to ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we maybe got a little greedy and kind of took advantage of rents and lodging prices. And maybe if we had just said, welcome Sundance and let's make the best festival we could, we wouldn't even be in this situation. How do you respond to that?
I guess that's possible. It's hard to know that. The invisible hand of economics always drives. If the demand is there, people are going to try to squeeze a few more dollars out. So that's always a hard one to second guess. But you could be right. If everything would have been equal, we could have controlled every aspect of it. Things could have been different. I think that things have just changed. I've seen 38, 39 Sundances now, and the dynamic on the street and the feel of it in the community, it's changed over the years a little bit. Yeah.
Hmm. Should the city look at? I mean, if it does leave, should the city look at doing something else in January, or do we just rely on good snow and skiers?
you know, I'm totally supportive of events and things that drive tourism, whether it's a sporting event, it's a other type of cultural event, an arts event. I'm totally supportive of events that drive tourism to our community. We are our tourist-based economy, and I think we have to do that.
Yeah. In terms of the future of Main Street with this Main Street plan, how involved is the HPCA in that?
We've had a couple board members sit on that process and keep the committee the membership informed. And I think overall we're supportive of it. We did submit a letter to City Council saying that we're in support of improving the street and creating some new vibrancy, but what that looks like, obviously we still need to figure out the process and what that looks like.
Yeah, and for you, Monty, I mean, what do you think?
I echo what Ginger said. We did have a couple of board members sit on it. Our board wasn't part of the process, but they kept us informed along the way, and we did provide feedback where it was possible. And we support the city wanting to invest money in downtown. It's definitely, we support that, and we've kind of been left out of the. It's been a little bit of a dry spell for they've invested dollars downtown, I think, and so we're definitely supporting them investing dollars downtown. And we'd be a collaborative. I think our message to them was we're willing to work with you guys, be a collaborative member on whatever you decide to do, and we'll try to find a ways to make sure it works for the business community.
Yeah, it just feels like that we just finished the the sidewalks on Main Street, but
yeah.
I kind of agree. Yeah, I feel that was the last thing that was done with the new sidewalks, and we fought so hard to get those. And so, yeah, and I think they're awesome. So, yeah.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
No. Thanks for having us.
All right, Ginger, Monty, thanks so much for your time.
You bet.
That's Monty Coates and Ginger Wicks with Historic Park City Alliance. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. The Park City Board of Education met Tuesday and then studio with a recap. I have newly named Superintendent of Schools, Lindsay Huntsman, along with School Board Member Nick Hill. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
And congratulations, Lindsay.
Thank you.
So I want to start there just with the announcement. When the announcement was made, you had said it's impossible to move forward without being transparent. It's a must do. And in the past, the district has not been as transparent as it could have been. Now that you are in a position, you say you will do better. So tell me how so.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is just being visible in the community and building those relationships and having honest conversations with our community members as well as our employee groups. I've been in the district for 13 plus years and already have well-established relationships with families, students, and our employee groups. So we can build that transparency, but it will take time.
Yeah, and you've done different jobs, so you feel like you have a really good overview of how things work.
Correct. I came into the district as a teacher, moved on to an assistant principal of the alternative high school, left for a few years, and then returned as a CTE director, and I've been back for 6 years.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the things we haven't been able to get answers to. I mean, let's talk about, I understand there are not one but two investigations concerning a district employee locally in the state AG's office. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, as you're well aware, we can't talk about personnel matters. I can say that we are looking into those, and I've been in this role for 2 weeks and 1 day, and the new board has been seated for approximately 1 month, so we are getting up to speed, and I can assure you we are addressing those concerns, but we can't speak about personnel matters in a public manner.
All right. Mike Tanner, COO, was absent from the school board meeting for the first time in a year or so. Was he asked not to attend, or
he was there. He was okay. In the audience. We've just transitioned the structure of our board meetings, asking that reports be submitted prior to the public meeting and including in the consent agenda. That way I can read that report prior to the public meeting as well as our school board members.
And I will say that's really about making the school board meetings more of a forum for productive discussion rather than simply hearing things that we can read about as a pre-read before the meeting. So there are often questions that we have from those reports. Kathleen had a question that the previous month, and there was something that I followed up on this month regarding that. So it's that those reports are still happening. They're public. Anyone can go and read them. We just felt it was a better use of everyone's time to really have the meeting be more focused on discussion.
And as a media representative, we appreciate that because that was always very difficult just to get information. It's like it forced you to be there and listen when maybe you didn't need to be.
Exactly so. Right.
You know what? I'm going to go back to last month's interview with you and Nick and Meredith, and about the reporting in the park record on the district office compensation and whether or not that report was correct or whether it needs correcting. Basically, I got the answer, it's being investigated, but it's been 3 months. And I think, especially being told on air by the former board president that the report was rife with errors and inaccuracies, no corrections have been made. The park record is standing by the story. What can you tell me? I mean, is the report correct? Can we move on?
Well, in large part, we can move on. What I would say is that we, as a board, felt it was important to do our due diligence. A new board with a new superintendent now, and we initiated an external investigation into the issues that were raised in that report. We have the initial report back from that investigation. We are working through some questions on it, but at this point, we can say that as a board, we will not be pursuing the claims, if you will, the article itself. Again, we can't talk about personnel issues. Those will always be handled internally, and that's right. It protects staff. It protects the district as a whole. We can't talk about those things publicly.
Sure, but when we talk about compensation, we can talk compensation because it is
public information.
And I'll speak to that. You know, with the exception of the business administrator and the superintendent, those two positions can negotiate their salary. Those are the only two positions in the school district. So you may remember the board unanimously approved a increase in compensation package for all employees a couple of years ago, and that was a proportionate across the board. No one got preferential treatment. You will see, you know, if you were in the district for a year versus 20 years, it looks a bit different based on the salary schedule, but no one received preferential treatment or was able to negotiate their salary on the side.
Yeah, and just to add to that, it is important to note, like we're taxpayers too, right? When we see those numbers put out in that way, we wanted to make sure we took time to investigate and made sure that really was the case, that all of the increases were in line with what we expected. And that is where we are. All of those increases are proportionate to the increases that we approved as a board across the district. And we're proud that we did because, it is a very hard community to live in economically, and it was essential that we did something that supported our staff to allow them to be here and be more effective for our kids.
Yeah, and stick around. I just want to bring one more. You use the word claims in reporting that's done, and again, I mean, the report didn't claim anything. The report reported on facts based on information that's available out there. So again, we're saying that the reporting in the publication was accurate at this point, and we're moving on.
We are saying that the factual basis of that article was public information.
All right, let's move on. The Latin honors system, can you tell me what that is?
Yeah, so historically we have ranked students, class rank, weighted GPA. So our AP courses carry more weight than, say, your standard secondary math 1 course. And we have seen a national trend of high schools across the nation moving away from class rank and weighted GPA because when college admission reps view applications and transcripts, they unweight the GPA. So they have their own methodology when they're reviewing student applications. So we're going to shift to a Latin honor system, very much like you see in a college, cum laude, summa cum laude, magna cum laude. We had anticipated doing this on schedule with realignment, but I received some feedback and information over the course of the last week and made the decision to press pause because it's an opportunity for us to educate our families and our students on the potential impacts and what this entails. So we will not implement until the fall of 26.
I was going to say that because so many kids have been working towards that. Again, to have the honor of graduation, you know, valedictorian or salutatorian. So that won't happen at least for another year. So how is that? How do you rank kids? I mean, how would you know who to put in those, you know, honorable
yes.
positions?
So there will be points associated, honor points, if you will, with different courses. Currently, we offer a lot of concurrent enrollment classes where kids are earning college credit, and they are not weighted. So those courses will start to get honors points. AP courses will get honors points. We're going to look at kids who earn our Seal of Biliteracy through our DLI program, awarding honor points for those kids who receive their certified nursing assistant while they're in high school. So really recognizing more kids, being more inclusive through this honor point system.
Okay, is this going to be a difficult transition? I mean, do you need to wait a couple of years
No, I actually came from a school district who made this transition back in the fall of 2017, and they saw no negative impact on their students. And they do have students who are high achieving and attend prestigious universities. So, again, we felt it was imperative for us to press pause so we can spend the school year 25-26 educating our families on what this looks like.
All right, let's move on to House Bill 267. This is the bill that prohibits collective bargaining by public sector employees. It did pass the House and the Senate. It's awaiting the governor's signature. How does the school district feel about this?
It was disheartening. We felt two Fridays ago after the rally on Capitol Hill, they circled the bill and that they were truly going to sit down and bring it back and have discussion. So we were caught off guard when the following Tuesday it passed, and now it is awaiting the governor's signature. But what I want all of our employees, not just those who are members of associations, is we will continue open dialogue. We will work alongside them to ensure that we maintain a positive relationship and we are doing our best to meet their needs, as well as our students. Because if our employees are disgruntled, that directly impacts our student outcomes.
While looking out for taxpayers.
Yes.
Any other bills the district's watching that we should be aware of?
Yes, we are watching, there's a couple, Senate Bill 37, minimum basic tax rate. That allows the basic levy money to bypass LEA and go right into the state. That would impact us because we would lose interest income. So Senate Bill 37 is one we're looking at and watching closely. Senate Bill 102, which is public education funding modifications. That is where they are identifying specific programs and reviewing them and determining whether or not they should sunset them. And that would impact us with regard to concurrent enrollment, counseling, dual language immersion, and a digital teaching and learning grant. And that one specifically could have a real negative impact in terms of our budget.
Like, what are we talking about?
Upwards of a couple million.
Significant. But, I mean, if that is kind of pulled off, does that mean that we just get to send less then to the state through our increased tax collections?
I wish it was that easy. It becomes complex and lots of equations that factor into what that dollar amount is that goes back to the state through recapture.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention about legislature?
We're watching it closely. There are well over 100 bills targeting education specifically. Which is why we're closely monitoring what's happening on the Hill.
Yeah. Do you have a lobbyist, the district? Do we pay somebody to look out for?
We have several individuals who are watching bills. We try to organize it by which department it's going to impact. So if it's finance, Randy, if it's curriculum, you know, myself, Stacy Briggs. So there's a handful of people who monitor. I attend the Joint Legislative commission that meets every Friday and talks about which bills they're going to support versus oppose.
All right.
But no, we are not paying a lobbyist to be there for us.
Finally, just wanted to ask about the new community spaces that opened at the same time as the new preschools. Yeah. They're functioning well?
They are. They're being very widely used. I mean, if anything, we have a scheduling issue with them at this point. I mean, it's wonderful to see how they came together, the spaces themselves, and secondly, to see how the community has really embraced them and is using them, and they're being used in the way we hope they would be.
Yeah, so what are they being used for?
So we host our community partners in there. We hold admin meetings in there, evening events.
We had a board retreat in one of them.
We've had a board retreat. Anytime we have an outside group in doing professional development with our teachers, we try to utilize those spaces because it is so bright and inviting and just a welcoming space.
Would they be used for anything outside of district purposes? I mean, community spaces for nonprofits or?
And we have a process where local organizations can request to use our spaces.
Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, things like that. All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I just want to reiterate my commitment to the community. I'm excited to build relationships, and to continue the great work of the district. There is way more good than bad happening in our schools, and I want to celebrate that, and I'm excited to move forward in a positive direction.
Okay. Well, again, congratulations, Lindsay Huntsman and Nick Hill from the Park City Board of Education and Superintendent of Schools. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Joining me now on the phone from Park City Film, I have the Executive Director, Katie Wang. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the upcoming screenings. I know we're excited about the Bob Dylan film coming.
Yes, absolutely. But first, I want to give a shout out to all of our Sundance Film Festival volunteers for our concessions. We had over 113 people help us out. Thousands of boxes of popcorn were sold, gallons of turkey chili, and a whole lot of love for indie film. So huge thanks to them. It's our biggest fundraiser of the year, and we could not do it without them at all. So yes, we're looking forward to, of course, A Complete Unknown this weekend and a couple other Oscar-nominated films on the calendar. But tonight, we're starting off with the Backcountry Film Festival at 7 o'clock. And this is a series of short films that celebrate the power and spirit of humans in winter, including a powerful short film by local filmmaker Shira Slog called Nisei. Tickets are $10 to $15 and proceeds benefit the Wasatch Mountain Institute. We'll have beer and wine available for purchase for those who are of age, but you can get information on that on our website. This weekend, of course, The Complete Unknown. Timothy Chalamet shines as the young Bob Dylan before he goes electric, for those in the know. Critically acclaimed film. It's been nominated for 8 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor. I love Timothy Chalamet, I will admit, but he is exceptional in this film. So definitely come see him in that. Then we are heading into another great film that I have been looking forward to since last summer. It's called Sing Sing, and it stars Coleman Domingo. And it's a drama about a theater program for prisoners. And this is a film about resilience, humanity, and the transformative power of art. Coleman Domingo, of course, amazing actor. This film won the South by Southwest Audience Award and has 2 Oscar nominations. Then we roll into Academy Award weekend, where we, as per usual, show the Oscar-nominated short films. We have a different collection each night, so you can come all 3 nights if you like, or pick and choose as you will. Friday night, we will show the animated short films, Saturday night, the documentary short films, and then Sunday night, the live-action short films. And if you come Saturday night, you can come a little bit early and celebrate with us. It's our 9th annual Oscar party on March 1st, Saturday night. From 5 to 7, we have a soiree, great food, drinks, fun little Oscar trivia, and then admission includes the Oscar-nominated documentary shorts as well. So you can get tickets and more information on that at parkcityfilm.org. Super fun celebration. We always do it the night before the Academy Awards. You have the opportunity to watch the full ceremony at home because it's quite long. but we like to just bring people together, talk about the art of film. The documentary shorts are typically the strongest of the 3 collections, and this year is no exception. They're all great, of course, but I have a particular fondness for documentaries, and they are really great this year. So that's pretty exciting. Then we roll into another Oscar-nominated film after the Academy Awards, so hopefully an award winner, but it's called I'm Still Here. And this is a political drama about a politician who has disappeared in Brazil in 1971 and his wife who never stopped seeking justice and the truth. It's based on a true story, incredible acting. It's nominated for 3 Oscars, including Best International Feature Film and Best Picture. That same weekend, we have a free screening, a matinee screening on Saturday. This is the 8th, so now we're into March, of Flow. And this is one of the most acclaimed animated films of the year. And it's a story about a courageous cat after his home is devastated by a great flood. It's an animated film. It's up for 2 Oscars, Best International Feature Film and Best Animated Film. So that gives you a little insight into how good this film is and what the critics think about it. And that'll be a free screening as part of our Family Film Fest that we do in partnership with Park City Library.
Okay, before we move on to the screenings next week, Sing Sing, yep. Is that a documentary or is that a dramatic film?
It's a dramatic film. Okay. So it is about Colman Domingo plays a prisoner who's wrongfully incarcerated, but then he gets involved with this prison program. And it's just amazing. I mean, even just seeing the trailer, just how these men are able to express themselves. I mean, in such a constrained environment, obviously, because they're in prison, but are able to kind of realize their full humanity and just be, you know, themselves and just kind of get in touch with their kind of their inner being and their inner soul through the art of theater. And it's just, it's amazing. And these are true. I mean, these theater programs do exist, so that is true. But the story itself is fictionalized.
Okay. And then next week, for those who are staying for winter, you've got,
yes,
again, some free screenings for everybody.
Yes. Yep. We're partnered with Park City Library for our February break screenings. There are matinee screenings Tuesday through Friday. We're starting off with one of the classics, one of my favorites. That's when I was a kid, Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Then we have The Wild Robot, which also is critically acclaimed, came out this fall. Thursday night is Paddington, the original. The sequel is coming out here shortly. And then Friday, the original Beetlejuice. So all at 4:00, all free admission, free popcorn, bring your friends and family. It's been great to see folks coming out. We just did Buena Vista Social Club last Saturday. 125 people showed up. It was amazing. People from all over our community, down in the valley, but just, you know, making films accessible to people, these amazing stories. Some are, you know, repertory, some are older, some are newer ones, but it's just great for us to have this opportunity to celebrate the art of film and give folks something to do after hopefully a day on the hill, if we get some good snow this weekend, or just out and about and bring people together and have it be free and accessible. So yeah, big thanks to Summit County RapTax for their support on that.
I was going to ask, how do you fund things like that? It's a lot of popcorn.
Yes, a lot of popcorn. We do have to pay for licensing for the films, you know, all of that. But yes, it is a big thanks to grant support. So thank you, Summit County residents and the RapTax,
okay,
for that. But yeah, parkcityfilm.org, you can get information on all the films, of course, tickets. But, you know, I think we've got a great, I'm really excited about the selection that we have coming up. Again, a lot of Oscar-nominated films, but which, you know, some people are like, oh, why do you care about the awards? And it's not so much the awards, it's just that these are some of the best films of the year, generally, kind of rising to the top. So it's
fun. Okay, I want to go back to Sundance. How did that, yep, go for you? Again, we saw, you know, crowds, and I don't know what you saw towards the end of the week. It just didn't feel very busy here in town.
We were busy the entire time. I mean, in part because they cut venues. The Sundance cut venues. We were back up to 6 screenings a day, so we were there from 6 a.m. to past midnight most days. With film screenings, and they did flip around. Those of you who've been going to Sundance for a while know that the award winners were usually on the Sunday, the last day, and so those were generally lightly attended, I think, because a lot of people had seen those films throughout the course of the festival. This year they put them on Saturday, so I think it incentivized people to get those tickets in advance. Perhaps if they were just here for the weekend, probably more people were in town, and then Sunday were ticketed films and, you know, some great films that they programmed for us that people bought in advance. So we ended up having a pretty even, you know, ebbs and flows, but it was pretty even throughout the festival for us, more so than certainly the past couple of years when we had fewer screenings. So it's a little hard to compare apples to apples in terms of, you know, what volume we saw, but we were generally seeing a pretty good turnout for folks. And then we had the press line up on our floor, on the 3rd floor there, which was pretty interesting. So lots of great people watching. Some lovely celebrities came by. Elijah Wood is a big fan of Shay's, so if he ever gets another job, he may be headed to Hollywood.
Okay. And if Sundance decides to move away from Park City, I mean, are you planning ahead here?
Well, we know that next year will probably be our last year at this volume, right? Even if Sundance stays in Utah, which we hope, fingers crossed and toes, that the idea is that it will be 80-20 towards Salt Lake as opposed to Park City. So I anticipate that hopefully we will still be a venue since we're a fixed venue and have been you know, we were created because of Sundance in 95. So hopefully that will continue. But my expectation is it would be less, you know, lower volume, fewer screenings, so that what we're seeing now will not be what we will see after 26. Mm. So hopefully it will stay. We're looking forward to next year. We've got some fun ideas for how to celebrate that and make it a fun experience for patrons. Yeah, we're just like everyone else, waiting for the decision, and then kind of seeing how that goes. Because we don't know if they're not here. Obviously, that's one thing, but if they're in Salt Lake, what that looks like is, you know, not entirely clear to us what that volume will look like. But we're prepared. You know, we'll still be here, and we would love to be a part of the festival. Because for us, I mean, for independent film lovers, there's no better festival, you know, better time of year. Sundance is the premier film festival in North America, and to be part of that is, you know, it's an honor, but it's just a joy. I mean, it's to talk about films for 10 days. I mean, it's the best thing I could possibly imagine in the job that I do. So we are a little sad to see that change, but hopefully it won't be too drastic.
Okay, Katie, thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you at the movies.
Katie Wang again, the executive director of Park City Film. This is KPCW Park City. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. Once again, we've got a winter storm warning in effect through Saturday, so be prepared.